Hello, and thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth Children's Corner Show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Children's Corner. Now, typically on the Children's Corner, we have many authors and guests who bring about upbeat and very lively conversations and very happy types of discussions. But every now and then, there are some issues that are very, very, very important to children, and it's something that we really need to focus attention on, and today's show is one of those. My very special guest is Nicholas Wilkinson. He is author of Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect, Acting, Not Reacting. The Ripple Effect takes a close look at what it's like to survive child abuse and how that abuse can cause long-lasting issues later in life. Forming relationships, self-respect, and esteem are just a few areas in the life of abuse survivors that Nick Wilkinson takes a look at while discussing his own abuse and recovery. Nick's book is available at Amazon.com for only 99 cents. It's a Kindle version, and I do have a direct link to that book in the show page description. So please go ahead and go online and purchase a copy. Give it to a friend who is working with that issue right now, or anyone else you know that could benefit from that kind of a book. So again, 99 cents, Kindle version, link is in the show page description. Okay, with that, let me go ahead and welcome Nick to the show. Hello, Nick. Thanks for joining me.
Hi. Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure. And, you know, child abuse is just such an important issue. I mean, I was shocked. You know, in the beginning of your book, you list, you have a direct link to childhelp.org, which lists so many types of information, events, statistics, stories, and all kinds of things. And to me, I was shocked to find that every year more than 3 million reports of child abuse in the United States. Each year. To me, that's just astounding.
Yeah, and one of the things I talk about early on in the book is that I don't think sometimes people understand sort of the depth of child abuse. I think that a lot of times because we want to, you know, just be optimistic as people, we think of it as, you know, smacking our kids too hard or spanking them. But there really is a definite separation, even between, like, severe punishment and child abuse. It's a very broad term, but there's a lot that can go in there, and it's hard to think about, I think, for most people. And that's why I wanted to be as honest with my own experiences as I could.
Yeah, and you know, you're right. You know, this is one of those things where so many times people try to turn an eye to, you know, when they see it happening. It's one of those cases where it's often just shunned, and often people who experience it just really don't want to bring it out in the open. You know, it's just one of those things where so many times it's behind closed doors, and it carries with it a whole range of emotions that, you know, people try to avoid, but it's just something that we kind of really have to look at and confront head on.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I'll give you an example of how sort of severe the willingness to look away really is. When I was 11 years old, I actually went to the police. I went into the police station. I, you know, cried my eyes out, told them what was happening. My abuser managed to come into the police station, convince them that I was a troubled kid who made up lies, and two policemen physically carried me to the car and put me in it with him to allow him to drive away with me. They didn't want to deal with it at all, and I'm not, you know, I'm not saying anything bad about police officers or even those officers, but it's something that needs to be taken serious every time.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, and that's, you know, that's one of the things I think that makes it, you know, so difficult for children, you know, to report it, because so often they're looked at as having active imagination, overactive imaginations, and you know, particularly if, you know, if a child has gone through an abusive kind of upbringing, you know, that carries with it all kinds of, it could elicit some really troubling behaviors, you know, just in trying to deal with it, and then that can in turn be, you know, mistaken as, you know, being a troublesome child, like you said.
Absolutely, you know, and most of the time you're going to find that the relationship between the abuser and the kid that's being abused is already a strained relationship for whatever reason it is, whether it's a step parent that, you know, just doesn't get along, whether there's drugs or alcohol involved. So to me, it's almost insanity that, you know, a police officer or an authority figure would go, you know, with the word of that person, because obviously there's a conflict there. And I think it probably takes a lot of courage to really do something about it, you know, to open your mouth and say, this is happening.
Yeah, very much so. And you know, and I was, one of the statistics that was also on the childhelp.org page was that, you know, as far as juvenile sexual abuse victims, that 90% of them know their perpetrator in some way. So, I mean, it's like someone who is known to them. And so that, you know, that in itself creates, you know, a whole bunch of issues when it comes to trying to correct the situation.
Absolutely, and I actually have extensive experience in the working with juvenile sex offenders, and you see it an awful lot as far as, you know, direct relation to the abuser, and that's thing, you know, those are the reasons why it doesn't get talked about, because not just because you don't want to get mom or dad or whoever in trouble, but also because sometimes you don't know that it's wrong until something severe happens. You know what I mean? Sometimes you just think that that's the way you're supposed to be growing up.
Yeah, yeah, that is so sad. Well, you know, if you wouldn't mind, I know on Amazon, for those of you listening, you can take a kind of an inside look at Nick's book. It gives you the different types of the chapters, but it also gives you the beginning paragraphs of the book. And I must say, Nick, I read that particular experience, and in it you recount your very first childhood memory, you know, I mean, and as far as it being an abusive one. And I'll tell you, it made my heart wrench when I read that. It was just, it brought tears to my eyes. I mean, it really was so. But if you wouldn't mind, you know, and I know, you know, the one thing I have to say, and I have to commend you and you know, thank you that for even bringing up and make, because this is such a personal issue, you know, and to put yourself out there to, you know, relay the kinds of experiences you've had, I mean, it really takes a very, very strong person to do that, and you're very much to be commended for doing that. So, and I know that anyone that reads it will benefit by that. So that in itself, you know, I'm sure, I hope, you know, helps you gain even more strength for your decision to kind of go ahead and tell a story. So, but anyway, I just had to say that because, you know, that is such a, and it's so hard sometimes to put ourselves out there and you know, it creates a vulnerability that, that can be scary to some people, and you know, particularly in this type of issue. I mean, it's something that it requires a very strong person to do. So you're to be commended for that. So, but if you wouldn't mind sharing with the listeners, kind of just, you know, that one moment, you know, that it became really clear to you that, you know, that there was, that you were the object of abuse.
Absolutely, and you know, with these memories, they're kind of in and out. They're, you know, at that age, and I'm talking pre-kindergarten age, maybe 4 or 5, just barely able to, you know, sort of construct things. But the earliest memory I have is we were living in Trenton, New Jersey, and it was my mom and my younger brother and myself, and she was a single mom, and you know, we were used to it. We grew up that way. But me and my brother were playing outside and, you know, just enjoying a regular day. Nothing was particularly wrong. And my mom just, she came storming outside and started yelling and screaming. And she just literally yanked me off my feet. And, I mean, she dragged me up the stairs. I'm not literally just bouncing me off of the stairs and dragging me behind her. And it was just... At that time, I had no idea what was going on. You know, it was total shock because, you know, this is my mom. I'm expecting her to, you know, take care of me and to love me, and I have no idea why she's so upset. And to this day, actually, I never know, but she, you know, brings me inside and throws me to the ground, and, you know, of course I can feel my face rub against the carpet to the point where it's almost, you know, breaking the skin, and it's red and it's irritated. And she picks me up after, you know, some crying and, you know, what did I do? What did I do? And she bit me on the cheek so hard that there was blood. And I could taste my own blood in my mouth. And eventually she just, it didn't really end as much as she just sort of dropped me and moved on, you know. And like I said, to this day, I don't really know what she was angry about, what happened, why it was me rather than my brother. It just, if I think back, that's probably as early as I can go as far as memories.
Wow. Yeah, that's, I mean, to me, that's just amazing, you know. And, it is just so sad, you know, that is like the earliest memory. I mean, you know, like you say, you know, you expect your parents, you know, to be, yeah, you know, they're disciplinarians, yeah, you know, and you know, the occasional scolding and that kind of thing, you know, to try and maybe, you know, instill some sense of values and beliefs, but physical abuse like that, no. I mean, to me, it's just my heart kind of just breaks every time, you know, I hear something like that, and also I see it. I mean, you know, there are times when I'm in stores and I see, you know, the parents yanking their kids and, you know, yelling at them, telling them all kinds of things, you know, that really are demeaning. And every time I look at it, I always give the parents one of those looks like, what the hell are you doing? You know, don't you know what you're supposed to be doing? You know, but anyway, you know, but
well,
anyway,
no,
you know,
I can totally relate with you, and I guess I have the, let's just say, the privilege of being 6'2 and 250 pounds, so I'm not afraid to speak up and sort of let somebody know that they're stepping out of line. And, you know, anybody that reads my blog or, you know, my website or whatever, they know that I'm not the kind of guy that interferes with parenting, you know. So if I think that something's inappropriate, it's definitely inappropriate. And, you know, if I have to speak up, I have to, because at the end of the day, these are kids, and somebody has to protect them. Somebody does.
Right, exactly. And if anything, you give the kids an idea that there is someone out there who, you know, recognizes and gives validity to some of the things they experience, you know, their feelings, you know. And because, you know, quite often, you know, like you say, I mean, if you grow up in an environment like that, sometimes you just don't know better, you know, if that's just the status quo. And, you know, until you're taught else, you know, otherwise, then sometimes it becomes really difficult to try and, you know, gain that different perspective that's necessary. Boy. Now, your book, you use the term the ripple effect. And can you kind of talk to the listeners a little bit about, you know, first of all, what motivated you to write the book, you know, and to get the story out, and why did you kind of look at it as the ripple effect?
You know, it's funny because the ripple effect was sort of this project that was ever developing. It started out originally as a novel. It was going to be, you know, a work of fiction loosely based on my life. And it ended up being a series of blogs that later became, you know, my actual book put together with some additional chapters and thoughts. But the ripple effect, what it really boils down to is, you know, when you toss that stone into the water, at first, everything's tight and close together, and you expect it to be, you know, wavy and choppy and bumpy. And I think that's what it's like when you're, you know, you're first recovering from child abuse, when you find safety and, you know, you're finally able to break free from your abuser. But what a lot of people don't realize, I think, is that as time goes by, even though those ripples sort of spread out, they're still there, you know, and it could be months in between too, but there's going to be sort of these lasting effects that really do affect you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, yeah, that was the one thing that I noticed when I read that little excerpt on Amazon, is that you talk about that, you know, you can go through and work with the experience and kind of put it into a certain perspective, but it's not something that you get over, you know, it's something that you do, that you, it becomes a part of you and really does stay with you until the day you die. So, you know, to me, it's like, and that's what even makes it just so much more important, that we really give attention to this and try and minimize and eliminate if we can. I know it's probably, you know, a foolhardy thought on my part, but I would just love to see it completely eliminated, you know. But I think, you know, maybe eventually, you know, it'll hopefully we'll become more educated enough to be able to, you know, to make strides so that, you know, each person kind of can have a healthy childhood and adult life, you know, as a result.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, even since I was 10 years old, there's been, you know, amazing strides in the fields and behavioral health and child protective services. There's, you know, mandatory reporting now, and there's usually at least some sort of investigation. So, there, you know, I'm all for the things that they're doing. It's just we still need more because, you know, I said it before and I'll say it again. They're kids. At the end of the day, these are children that the only people in the world that are responsible for them, the people that are supposed to be nurturing them and taking care of them, are abusing them. And somebody has to step in. Somebody has to say something, even if it's just to let them know there's somebody here for you that's, you know, that has no agenda, that doesn't want anything from you but for you to be safe.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very true. Now, do you feel that this, it's a kind of like a cycle, that it's one of those kinds of things that quite often the one who's abused ends up becoming an abuser, kind of like a, you know, passed on from generation to generation sometimes?
Well, I think that statistically speaking, it probably without a doubt would seem that it's definitely, you know, generational. If you're abused, you grow up to be abusers. And I've been working in this field now for 14 years. Since I was 18
wow.
years old, I, you know, my first job was in a residential treatment facility. And ever since then, I've been working with teens in crisis. And you see an awful lot of, you know, second generation, third generation abuse. But I think, you know, it's also smart to realize that it doesn't have to be that way. You know, people
yeah.
of all walks of life make bad choices. My mother and my father both came from married families in the suburbs who have, you know, groups of kids that are successful. Both my father and my mother just decided at a young age to make some really bad choices, and it affected not just their life, but, you know, the path that my life took. And I'm the oldest of 10, so,
wow.
you know, the lives
Holy
of others
cow.
As well.
Wow, that is amazing. Well, you know, and it's just so interesting because the woman that I have on, I have a show coming on Thursday. The author's name is Morella Scott, and she wrote a book called In Our House, Perception Versus Reality. And in her book, deals a lot of, it's her story, and it deals a lot with abuse as well. And she comes from a family of 7 children, you know, so, I mean, it was also a very large family. But, you know, well, first of all, it's interesting that we ended up having two shows this week dealing with this issue, but it's obviously something that really, you know, people need to talk about it. People need to become educated, and people need to become active like you are in the work that you do to try and, you know, turn things around for those who are abused as well. So, but yeah, it's you know, being a part of a large family, sometimes I guess maybe there are some added pressures, and I'm not giving any, you know, legitimacy or any, you know, reason for that to happening, but obviously, you
sure.
know, large families, there's a lot of added pressure, and I guess maybe sometimes it's wrongly transferred into abuse.
Yeah, and I would say that that's definitely the case. And as far as similarities go, I think you're going to see more and more, you know, the deeper that you dive into it, because people that make bad choices don't usually make one bad choice. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're going to see probably alcoholism, some drug use, some neglect. You're going to see involvement with, you know, either gangs or, in my parents' case, motorcycle gangs. And, you're just going to see lots and lots of negative choices for people that you wouldn't expect to have 2- and 3-year-olds running around the house.
Yeah, that's very true. And you're right. You know, it really is about choices. And boy. Well, you know, we're about halfway through the show already. So I want to take just a quick 2-minute break here. And then when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more specifically about your book and some of the topics that you cover in your book so that the listeners will get a really good idea of what Child Abusive Ripple Effect has to offer. Okay? So
sounds great.
Great. Okay, we'll be right back, everyone, after this 2-minute break.
Here's what Heather had to say about joy potential.
Our lives have many chapters, and some transitions are scarier than others. Fortunately, the main character in your book comes in contact with people on a new job that he thought he would never have to do at his age. They listen and talk with each other, and the process they go through is magic and life-changing. Listening is one of the most important skills anyone can have and a skill anyone can develop. I so enjoyed John and Leonora and remember thinking while I was reading the book, are they real? Some people help us put our training wheels on and some people help us take our training wheels off. Anyway, I did so enjoy the book. Thank you.
Hi, Robert. Evelyn here from treeofenchantments.com. My little online magical forest shop. And talk about magic. Boy, joy potential is truly magical. This story about a week when everything turns to a new life path, speaking of fear turning into excitement, startling new connections with others, breathtaking new thought patterns, really, I could go on and on. The ending is such a surprise. Honestly, I couldn't put it down. And when I finished reading it, I wanted more. You don't come across books like this often in life. No matter where you are, joy potential will open awareness and simply delight. Thank you, Robert, for a really wonderful book. I look forward to the next book and to the next one and the one after that. I hope many, many people read Joy Potential. They will be very glad they did.
For more information, visit www.joybook.me. That's joybook.me. Or call 843-808-0777.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, this is the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Children's Corner Show, and today my very special guest is Nicholas Wilkinson. He is author of Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect, Acting, Not Reacting. Again, his book is available on Amazon.com. The Kindle version is only 99 cents. So please go ahead and purchase your copy and also go ahead and recommend it to your friends, acquaintances, anyone that you think that would benefit from gaining some important information and knowledge about the area of child abuse. If you have anybody in your circle of friends and acquaintances that is in the area of education, be sure to forward them that link. And I do have a direct link to his book, at Amazon in the show page description. Okay, Nick, we're back.
Okay, great.
Great. Okay, now a couple of the topics that were in your book that I kind of would like to highlight for listeners is one of them was called The Mask. Can you tell maybe the listeners a little bit about what and who is it wearing a mask?
You know, and I knew that this was definitely going to be one that you wanted to talk about because people are intrigued by this one. I think it's because it's honest. You know, at the end of the day, all of us wear masks. Every human being, what they say when you start dating somebody, you don't get to know the real them for like 3 months. And I think it's the same with everybody. The masks that you wear are just who you want to be portrayed as from the outside in. You know, it doesn't reflect what's going on in your brain and in your heart. It doesn't, you know, reflect the pain and the sadness and the sorrow. It's a reflection of how you wish you looked or how you need to look to survive this situation. And like I say in the book, it's as protective as, you know, a football player's helmet sometimes, because sometimes it's our only defense. You know, abused kids are beaten down and beaten down and made to feel like that they're nothing. So in order to project that they're something, it has to be somebody else. It can't be, you know, it can't come from within because there's nothing there to bring out, if that makes any sort of sense. And,
oh, it does, yeah.
Yeah, and just when I talk about the mask, I just... Sometimes I wanted to talk about how it feels to be on the other side of the mask. You know that you're sort of seeing things through different lenses. This isn't the way things would be if you were being yourself. And, you know, at this point, if we're talking about the ripple effect, this is where the ripples are, you know, usually really close together and you're having outbursts or defiant behavior or, you know, however you're manifesting your feelings, because we, at this point, we don't know how to get them out. The people that were supposed to show us how to love and express ourselves and you know, tell you what we need, instead taught us how to hide and how to be quiet, so we don't have that skill, and the mask sort of takes that place.
Yeah. Now, with your work with teens, do they understand the whole idea of a mask, and do you kind of try to unmask them in a way to be able to get to know the real teen behind the mask?
They do. The teens that I've worked with have really responded to it, not just because of sort of the creativity of it. You can do so much with the masks, whether it's, you know, just therapeutic artwork and then talking about the feelings behind it, but it's something tangible. So teenagers, of course, you know, are going to run to something like that. But one aspect I talk about with our teenagers all the time, especially with the juvenile sex offenders that I've worked with, was the phrase, "I can't control it." And I talk about how we use that mask as sort of the scapegoat. It's not me. It's just that's what it's making me do it, or I there's nothing I can do to stop it. And we try to talk about how once you take that off and deal with yourself, you no longer have to worry about letting people in, you know, and suffering and pain and all that becomes joy and laughter. And it's, you know, people say it all the time, laughter is contagious, and it's true, and it grows, but it can't happen while the mask is on.
Yeah. You wouldn't be able to see it. You wouldn't be able to see it and express it. Yeah.
And honestly, you wouldn't know what it was if you've seen it because, you know, it's not something that you've experienced before. 99% of the time, there's no, you know, self-worth or self-loving or, you know, just there's a total feeling of not even uselessness. I tell people it's a feeling of just zero, that there's just nothing there.
Wow, yeah. Boy, that is something. Now, one of the areas that also has to be prevalent in this kind of situation is another topic that you talk about is the guilt. You know, you know, in so many times now, you know, you there's kind of, and from what I've read and you know, a couple different areas and books and that kind of thing is, you know, there's, you know, you have the person who is abused and then you have the abuser. You have two different aspects to the issue. Now, often I would think, you know, and I know children just sometimes really don't have the ability to discern, you know, like the example of you, when, you know, your mom did that to you, you know, you probably, I mean, it's like you're one of your things is, what did I do? You know what I mean? It's kind of like, that's a natural reaction is, what did I do to elicit this kind of reaction and behavior? So now is, when you talk about the guilt, when you talk about it in your book, is it from both perspectives or is it primarily the ones that are abused that you refer, you're talking about?
Well, I would say definitely from the side of those who have been abused. I can't really speak from the other side because in my experience, even later in life in my 30s, I was never even able to get an admission of guilt out of my
life. Okay.
So there's definitely nothing there for them to feel guilty
to admit
about.
To. Yeah.
Right.
Mm.
But there's so many different aspects of it. For me, there was guilt of abandoning my family. There was guilt of my little brothers having to take my place. There was, I mean, just so many different aspects. And, of course, at the same time, you feel bad because, and I say it in that chapter, how you start to question yourself whether or not you were doing something that deserved that because these people, you know, everybody knows that mom and dad are supposed to take care of you. So if they're not, what are you doing wrong? You know what I mean? And
mm-hmm.
as a kid, we can't process that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and I found it interesting, you know, in that little chapter you talked about when you kind of ran away from the home situation and ended up going to an aunt and Virginia, I believe, is where it was, and yeah, and you know, having to leave your brother behind, you know, but like you said, I think in that one it was all about you, self-preservation, I guess, is really what kind of overruled everything.
Absolutely. At the end of the day, I got to a point where I had enough. Where I don't know if I could have survived another punishment or another beating, and it was time to go. I finally sort of reached out and told somebody who, you know, thankfully at the age I was, which was like junior high, my sixth grade, seventh grade, my daughter's in that grade now, and I can't even imagine her having to go to somebody the way I did and say, you know, I'm getting my butt kicked every day and I'm afraid to go home and I need something. And fortunately, I had some strong friends that took me in and eventually got me in contact with some out-of-state relatives, and things definitely did get better after that, but not for a long time.
Yeah.
This is something, and even today at 35, this is something that, you know, very much impacts every part of my day.
Yeah. Yeah, that, you know, that was one of the things that I noticed is that you spend a couple chapters talking about relationships, and so I my thought is, you know, in those chapters that you discuss the impact that kind of abuse has on not only relationships during that period, but probably for the rest of your life with everyone.
Yeah, I think that's very accurate. The way I set up the relationships was I wanted to talk about, I split it in half, and I dealt with emotional relationships and physical relationships because, you know, they're very separate parts of the same coin, and it's so hard starting with emotional relationships because you've been abused, you've been nailed and taken out of this home, and we're assuming that you're trying to get back to the normal rhythm of life, and how do you do that? How do you go from being emotionally cut off and living this sort of lonely existence to, you know, trusting somebody enough to have a real connection with them, even just on an emotional level, it's at first it seems impossible.
Yeah. I mean, you know, because I would think that there's a whole lot of concern and trust would be a real difficult area to try to, you know, apply to relationships, you know, because, I mean, if you can't trust your parents, you know, and a relationship, then, you know, who are you going to trust?
Absolutely. And, you know, for us, there was no roadmap. There was nobody there growing up to give us advice on how to deal with even just normal teenage situations when it comes to, you know, dating and hormones and all that.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, and then of course, the, you talked, you know, that was like the, and the emotional aspect and the physical, gosh, I would think that that would even be more difficult, you know, because it's, I mean, you're talking, when you talk about, you know, physical intimacy, you know, or just, you know, that kind of thing, that it would be, I mean, gosh, in the one book I'm reading with Marella, I mean, in hers, they, you know, her father like beat the kids constantly, and there was one of them just grew up walking by the father with and reflexively just putting his hand up to, you know, to avoid any potential hit, you know, and that to me is just, it's just amazing, you know, that that kind of you know, that someone would have to incorporate that into their being, is, you know, that whole idea of protecting the body from abuse.
Absolutely. And, you know, going into the physical part of it, there's just so much there that the way I explain it in my book is that up until this point, sort of the people that we've entrusted to take care of us physically have done the polar opposite. They've done as bad as they could possibly do in that situation. And where do you go from there? How do you learn how to be soft and gentle and intimate if nobody has ever been soft or gentle or intimate with you? And, you know, then I talk about, you know, you run into the guilt and loneliness, and you, again, you fall back into those old patterns of thinking, you know, what did I do wrong? Or even worse, you end up in a codependent relationship or an abusive relationship because you think that abuse is the norm. This is the way that people love each other. It's the way you've seen it your whole life. And you sort of have to be taught from the ground up, emotionally speaking, how to deal with it before you can do it physically. And for teenagers, you know, that's a lot easier said than done because they want physical first and emotional later.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Boy, that is a real challenge. Now, one of the topics that you cover in your book is called Getting Over It, but Do you really get over it, or is it just a matter of coping and maybe getting beyond it?
I think that that's a really good way of looking at it, to say getting beyond it, because you really can't, and the me using the word get over it is explained a little bit more in the chapter, that it's sort of in jest, because you can't get over it, and it's something that people, even people that love you and understand what you've went through, to them, it's hard to understand why you can't just move past it, because they didn't experience. They don't know what it's like to be physically betrayed by the people that are supposed to be closer to you than anybody else in the entire world. So
yeah.
I talk a little bit about how hard it is to sort of explain to people, and especially when you're trying to get yourself out there and, you know, do better.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cause when I read that, I thought, you know, this is, I mean, like you had talked about, you know, that it was something that lasts, you know, till the day that you die. So, I guess, you know, part of your book, you talked, you mentioned, is kind of like a subtitle in a way. It's called Acting and Not Reacting. And what do you mean by that?
Okay, well, this is actually something that came from my work with teenagers over the years, whether they're abused and neglected or juvenile sex offenders or, you know, sort of anywhere within that range. I've done an awful lot of different work. And acting, reacting, acting, not reacting is just It really is just what it sounds like. It's when you encounter a situation that needs to be dealt with, you want to act on the situation. You want to get a plan, you want to communicate, and you want to accomplish your goal. When you react, you don't think. You rush right in, and often it blows up in your face.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's I can see where that, and particularly if someone is coping with, of being abused, that it would be really important to have that conscious action, versus an emotional reaction as far as being able to kind of move forward, with whatever it is that they're confronting.
Well, and I think sometimes early on in the situation where you're removed from the abuse, you're going to have triggers. There are going to be things that sort of set you off and take you, on an emotional roller coaster. And it's not uncommon for kids that have been abused to have, oppositional defiant disorder or something ADHD, and they're going to react. They're going to just sort of blow up because they were triggered and they don't know how to deal with it, and it's something that they need to be taught. So when I talk to the teenagers, especially teenage boys, that's, my main population, and I talk to them about it's okay to be mad, it's okay to be furious, it's okay to want to hit something. It's how you go about accomplishing that goal, the choices that you make that make the difference.
Right.
I'm a normal person at the end of the day. I get mad and want to turn the radio up and yell and, punch the punching bag just like everybody else does.
Uh-huh.
But I've learned not to do it in the middle of the classroom and not to do it at the mall. And, it's something that the teenagers, especially in this population, they need to learn. It's a skill that they have to develop. And, we all know that when you try skills and you learn skills, you fail. Especially at the beginning, you're going to fail, you're going to fail, you're going to fail, and eventually you're going to succeed. And
right.
It's going to grow from there. And I just teach these guys that it's okay to fail. It's okay to admit that you messed up or that you weren't ready or, whatever the situation may be.
Yeah, very, very true. And, and one of the things in your book, the finale, The Change, and I don't want to necessarily give that away. I think that I want people to buy your book and find out what the finale is all about. So, but we're down to the last couple of minutes, Nick. So if you would, are there any kind of final thoughts that you may want to share with the listeners about your book and kind of what you hope to achieve, and just basically any kind of final thoughts you want to share with the listeners?
Sure. At the end of the day, it really is about acting or reacting. It really is just about these ripples, and I want people to understand that what happened, we can't just put it behind us and never look back. It's become part of us. It's part of who we are as a person. And it has long-lasting effects, things that need to be dealt with, skills that need to be learned, and things that need to be talked about that aren't pleasant to talk about, like we talked about at the beginning of the show. And I think it's important for people to hear real stories. I think it's important for them to know the truth about what's going on and the truth about child abuse, that it's not just a spanker with a heavy hand. It's often, I tell people all the time, I was beat with the chain to a bicycle, to a 10-speed bicycle. That's not a heavy hand, That's real, true abuse, and it's out there, and people need to start talking about it and really just being part of the solution.
Yeah, very much so. Well, Nick, I really want to thank you for your time today. I really appreciate speaking with you, and this is such an important issue. And on my Thursday show, I'm going to cross-reference this show because I think, people can't hear enough about the issue, and hopefully, people who maybe were abused will learn something from this, or if they see it happening, maybe do something about it, because being a part of the solution really is the key.
Right, and I just want to throw out there that I'm available through my blog. It's actingnotreacting.com, and I answer questions. If you are dealing with, you know, a teen in crisis, if you have any sort of parenting or any question about abuse or anything like that, I respond to all my messages personally. And if you want to stay anonymous, I'll just do a blog about it, and you can read it just like everybody else.
Oh, that's great. Thanks. You know, I'll be sure to add that to the show page description so that people will have that there as well. So that's really great to know. What a great reference. And I just let you know, I have on my website a recommended reading page, and I'll be sure to add your book to that Children's Corner section there. So, and I'll be talking about it every time I can.
I appreciate that.
It's my pleasure. Again, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for today's edition of the Children's Corner. My very special guest has been Nicholas Wilkinson. He is author of Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect, Acting, Not Reacting. And I do have a direct link in the show page description to his book at Amazon.com. And again, the Kindle version is only 99 cents, so purchase a copy for yourself. Send it off to friends who might find it valuable. If you have any educators in your circle of friends and acquaintances, let them know about it, because it would be something that is very important and it would be wonderful to share. So, everyone, thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth's Children's Corner show. To become a show follower, visit www.blogtalkradio.com/ByteRadioMe and click on the follow link. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at ByteRadioMe, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. Be sure to visit our website at www.byteradio.me, that's B-I-T-E, RADIO.ME. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.